And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. At age 12, it was a flying lesson. At age 14, he was flying a plane by himself. By age 18, he was doing turns and loops in an air show. And now, at 28, Jamel Larkins runs his own aviation business and is on a crusade to encourage kids to soar in the field of transportation. We'd like to welcome to the show Jamel Larkins, an airplane pilot who runs Ascension Aircraft and is one of the mentors and speakers for the 9th annual Kansas City Summer Transportation Institute, hosted by the University of Missouri Kansas City Institute for Human Development. The program runs June 18th through July 17th of this year. Jamel Larkins, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me this morning.
So tell us how you got involved with the Kansas City Summer Transportation Institute.
Well, I've been working for the past 8 years with the Federal Aviation Administration as their ambassador for aviation and space education. So I have the opportunity to travel all across the country and talk to students, high school, middle school, as well as in colleges, about their career opportunities in aviation and why they should consider possibly joining this dynamic industry.
And it's about when you started middle school. Tell us about your background growing up and how you got into flying. What inspired you?
Well, I was a little kid based in Augusta, Georgia, with the goal and dream of being involved inside of the air. I thought originally I was going to become an airline pilot. Took my very first flight through an aviation youth program called the Young Eagles Program and just got hooked on flying. The concept of being inside of an airplane and making it turn and climb and descend was something that really intrigued me.
Let's go back before that. How did you find out about the Young Eagles program?
So I went to space camp when I was 10 years old. And when I was at space camp when I was 10, I really discovered that I had a passion for aviation. Came back, and then I asked my parents if they would buy a Microsoft Flight Simulator for me. And I started playing that for hours and hours. And during that time frame, I actually started getting on the internet, since it was the beginning of that stage of our life. And then wrote on an aviation chat room that, hey, there's a 12-year-old kid from Augusta, Georgia that's interested in becoming a pilot.
You spoke about yourself in the third person.
Yeah.
Hey, look, there's this 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
You might be interested.
And a Delta Airlines captain wrote back and told me about a program called the Young Eagles Program and told me how to get in contact with them. So I went to their website, called up their headquarters, and got a list of all the local pilots that participated in the program in my hometown of Augusta. Went for the very first flight and just got hooked.
Now, as you were contacting Delta, were you still representing yourself as an adult voice, saying this 12-year-old kid is phenomenal?
It is amazing the image that you can portray given technology these days compared to what it was, you know, a couple decades ago. But when I first started my company a couple years later, it surprised me how many people didn't know how old I was when I first started doing, like, selling books and videos, and then started doing some other business things when I was in the 15, 16 age range. So technology is a beautiful thing if you're a kid trying to run a business.
And people are still surprised by your age now.
Absolutely. Sometimes, you know, I still walk into a meeting with someone to close an aircraft transaction or something along those lines, and they have a little bit of a shocked look on their face.
What gave you who gave you your first flying lesson at the age of 12, and how did you know you were ready for it? Take us to that day.
I was really fortunate. I remember the day just like it was yesterday. On June 29th of 1996, inside of my hometown of Augusta, Georgia, there is a gentleman by the name of Mr. Wyman Fox. Local guy there. He was the Young Eagles coordinator for Augusta. And I contacted him, asked him if he would take me for my very first flight. And, you know, a couple of weeks after that very first phone call, we scheduled for me to go flying on the 29th. And I remember driving up to the airport, and he had his airplane inside of a hangar. We opened up the hangar doors, pulled out his airplane. He pre-flighted the airplane, showed me what he was checking and making sure the airplane was airworthy. And then I remember him cranking up the engine, us taxiing out to this little 3,000-foot runway. Nothing else was out there at the airport. He pushes the throttle forward. We take off. And then a couple moments later, I'm literally flying over my house, my middle school at the time, getting a chance to put my hands on the controls of an airplane and see what it was like to be a pilot. And it was one of the most invigorating things you could ever possibly imagine.
Was it like the Microsoft Flight Simulator?
In terms of what the instruments and the controls do, absolutely. But the feeling of actually being inside of the airplane and doing it firsthand and controlling it, a simulator can't replicate that.
So you were pretty much hooked after that.
Absolutely.
How did you practice after that, and what was that experience like? How did you go back and keep doing
that very first flight, I realized that was going to be my really only opportunity to be able to get involved inside of the industry firsthand, because no one in my family flew. I had no connection to the aviation industry outside of this one glimpse of what it could be like. So as soon as we landed, I asked Mr. Fox, I said, you know, can I help out? Can I help out with the Young Eagle flight rallies and things like that that you guys put on? And he said, absolutely. So literally about every other week at my local airport, they had Young Eagle flight rallies. I would be there helping them out, doing anything that they needed done. During the weekends that they weren't doing that, I was at the local airport washing other people's airplanes, doing anything that I possibly could just to get the chance to meet local pilots. And then in exchange, a lot of times they would, if they were going around and they were coming back and they had an empty seat, they would allow me to go on the airplane with them and go flying with them. And I got a chance to build some flight time. And then I also asked my parents if they would help me out, and they gave me a few dollars per month to be able to go and start taking flying lessons, which is pretty expensive. On average, it takes between probably about $120 to $150 an hour per flying lesson at a standard general aviation airport.
And what's the standard session in flying lessons?
Typically about an hour, a little bit of hour of flight time, and then plus or minus probably 30 minutes of ground time, the brief and debrief before each flight lesson.
Talking like a pilot. Your mom thought you were crazy.
Absolutely. To this day, she still does. But and it's real funny because the first time, she always says that I came home with these crazy stories, and every year they got bigger and bigger. The first time I come home and I'm like, Mom, I need you to sign this permission slip because I'm going flying this weekend. And she didn't really believe me. And then the day before, I came back to her and said, I need you to sign this. So she finally signed it. Had no idea what was going on. A couple of years later, I come back to her and I'm like, hey, I'm going up to Canada to fly solo at the age of 14. I'm good. Don't worry about it. I got it all taken care of. Thought I was crazy about that. I come back, and then a couple of years later, I'm like, by the way, I'm going to start learning how to fly aerobatics. So I'm going to be flying down to Florida on the weekends to do some training down there. Thought I was a little crazy about that. And then my senior year of high school, I come back to her. I'm like, by the way, I've been flying aerobatics for a couple of years off and on. I think I'm going to start flying air shows this summer.
This is such an interesting story of a driven young individual. Age 14, most guys are telling their mom, I'm going to the mall, or I'm going down the street to the roller rink, or I'm going somewhere that I'll say is the mall and roller rink, and it really isn't. You say, I'm going to Canada to fly solo. Tell us about that experience at 14, going to Canada for your first solo flight.
Well, it was a means to an end for me, in all honesty, because what happened when I was 13 years old, I was trying to figure out ways of lowering the cost of flying for myself. Like I mentioned, $120, $150 an hour is pretty steep for a teenager that doesn't have a full-time job or have a trust fund attached to them. So I had to kind of be creative of how I was going to be able to pay for my flying, hence the reason why I volunteered at the local airport a lot. But I also realized that maybe I could stretch my parents' dollars that they were giving me every month to go flying. And I didn't like the fact that every single time I went up, I had to pay for a flight instructor to essentially start babysitting me. Because after flying for 2 years, I had gotten to the point that I could actually safely handle an airplane in solo flight and didn't need a flight instructor to go up from a safety standpoint. So I petitioned the FAA when I was 13 years old to try to get an exemption to fly solo before my 16th birthday.
Really? And what happened with that process?
I got a letter back from the FAA saying they needed more information before they gave me their final verdict. And so during that time frame that I was trying to gather some additional information, I flew with 6 different flight instructors, 2 designated flight examiners. All of them wrote letters. And as I was doing this, I found out in Canada, you only have to be 14 to fly solo up there. So I got the idea, maybe if I travel to a different country, I get my license, I do it safely, I do everything legally I need to do, I come back to the United States, and then I show them that I've accomplished this, maybe they'll give me an exemption to be able to fly, use my Canadian license here inside the United States. So then I decided I was going to do that, but I didn't want to ask my parents for the funds, so I ended up writing about 100 different companies asking them if they would help sponsor my trip up there. Unfortunately, about 90% of them told me no, but the few 10% that remained, like Shell Oil and Michelin Aircraft Tires, that said yes, gave me the funds that I needed to be able to go up to Timmins, Ontario, Canada when I was 14. 10 days after I arrived there, flew solo, came back to the United States, went through this long, drawn-out process with the FAA. They ultimately told me no, but that was probably a good thing because that's what encouraged me to start my business shortly thereafter.
You started your business shortly thereafter at age
15.
At age 15. What's even going through your mind when you're thinking about, I'll write 100 different companies to sponsor my trip to Canada? so I can fly solo at age 14. Oh, that didn't work. I'm going to start a business at age 15. This is out of the realm of possibilities or even frame of reference for most young people. You were special. How do you change that?
I wouldn't say that it's out of the realm of possibilities. I would agree with you that it's definitely out of the frame of reference.
Yeah.
Because one of the things about me was I didn't honestly know about starting up my own company. There's a saying that a good mentor of mine came up with, or he at least says, which is, I was dumb enough to start but smart enough to finish. And I think that was so true, because if I had any idea of what was involved in starting up your own company when you're 15 years old and the trials and tribulations associated with it, I probably wouldn't have done it, or trying to petition the FAA when I was 13, things along those lines. But I was idealistic enough to be able to think that I could actually accomplish the goal without having the knowledge of really knowing what truly goes involved in it. And that was probably a benefit to me, in all honesty, in the very beginning, early days. For most other people, with the tour that we do now, which we'll get to, that's one of the big messages that I like to try to leave with the students inside of the presentation, is that no matter what your goals or dreams are, that you can honestly make any of those become your reality. If you can think and see a 12-year-old kid from Augusta, Georgia, goes for his very first flight, and then within a few years later is in Canada flying solo, starts his own company, purchases his own airplane before he graduates from high school, and then starts working with the federal agency representing them by the time he turns 21, anything and everything is legitimately possible. So no matter what your goals or dreams are, figure out a way to start working on making those dreams become your reality today, and not have excuses on you're not old enough, you don't have enough money to be able to do it, you don't know the right people. All of those are obstacles that you can overcome if you're willing to put in the work.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Quite an inspiring story today from Mr. Jamel Larkins, an airplane pilot who runs Ascension Aircraft and is one of the mentors and speakers for the 9th Annual Kansas City Summer Transportation Institute, hosted by the University of Missouri Kansas City Institute for Human Development. The program runs June 18th through July 17th here in town. We're talking to a man who knew his dreams so clearly, so early, and that's definitely a rare thing. Jamel, what would you say are the fundamentals of flying a plane? What's one thing you need to keep in mind? And then we'll talk about the different types of planes that you fly and need licenses for.
Well, there's the basic physical capabilities of being able to actually fly and handle the airplane. But more so than that, it's the mental part. You know, being able to understand airspaces and being able to communicate on the radios, being able to actually figure out how to get from point A to point B and navigating either by dead reckoning or using some of the more advanced navigational tools that we have today, such as GPS, ADS-B, and all the other stuff. Believe it or not, being a pilot today is more about being a systems manager in the majority of the airplanes out there than it is about actually having the physical capabilities of being able to make an airplane take off or land.
And you even have apps that you use today, too.
Absolutely.
What are some of those apps?
There's quite a few of them out there. You know, there's navigational apps that we use. There's scheduling apps to be able to book an airplane. Our company, Ascension Air, has one that our owners use to be able to book and register an airplane whenever they want to go somewhere. There's apps, like I said, to navigate, to do weight and balance checks before you get inside of the airplane to make sure everything's within weight limits, as well as center of gravity limits to be able to make sure the airplane flies safely. Anything and everything you could possibly imagine. I mean, there's even a directory that we basically utilize to be able to tell us how much the price of gas is at different airports all across the country.
But your favorite app is one that helps you identify planes.
Yes. So there's,
what's it called?
It's a app called PlaneSpot that literally you can type in the N number of any airplane that you see out there. And basically the N number is, imagine like a license plate for an airplane. You can type it in and you can find out who owns the airplane, how long they've owned it, what type of airplane it is. A lot of really cool and neat stuff on it.
You made some interesting finds on that app recently in Seattle.
Yeah, so last night, actually, it was actually in Seattle. Our company, Ascension Air, is looking at opening up a new base there for fractional ownership. And so we had the opportunity to go there, talk to a lot of people that had airplanes, and also just quickly glance at, using apps like that, of how long they've owned the airplanes and all sorts of information. That's definitely handy when you're trying to figure out how to sell an airplane to them, or at least to share in one.
And you ended up seeing airplanes of a lot of the technology moguls that yes. have their own planes. In Talk about that.
In Seattle, there's definitely, you know, the technological capital of our country, kind of, sort of. So it's amazing. The majority of those people that are leading those corporations have airplanes that allow them to be more efficient. There was an interesting study done by the National Business Aviation Association that shows that companies that have business aircraft, no matter what type, if it's a single-engine piston-powered airplane or up to a major corporate or business jet that they utilize to transport executives across the country around the world, companies that have those airplanes are closer to, if I remember the statistic correctly, about 80% more effective than companies that don't have business jets or business aircraft that they can utilize to be more productive.
Because some things require face-to-face
absolutely
interaction.
And, you know, even in our business, the capability, or actually I could even use this in multiple examples, the opportunity for me to be able to go and do my business during the daytime. A recent example, I was inside of my office in Atlanta, Georgia one morning, finished a couple of meetings, hopped inside of an airplane, flew up to Michigan, spoke to a bunch of students about Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University and the FAA, and then after that, flew down to Indianapolis, had another meeting, and then flew back to Atlanta, and all did that in one day and ended up sleeping in my own bed. There's no way that you could ever do that on the airlines without having a business aircraft.
And now talk about that. The wonderful little-known world of private airports and private airplanes. You tell us if it's under 800 miles, you could actually get there before a commercial
absolutely
airline.
There's so much time that's wasted going through security, waiting an hour before your plane departs, to having the, you know, have delays, or the routing that commercial airlines have to go to for them taxiing back in, deboarding the plane. Probably on average, I would say there's probably about an hour and a half to 2 hours of wasted time per se that's associated with that. Whereas if you are flying yourself or flying privately, you avoid all that. There's no security lines. You literally drive up to the plane, you hop in it, you're off, and then you land. And typically, you're a lot closer than what commercial airports are. There's about 500 commercial airports inside the United States that have commercial airline service. There's about 5,000 total airports inside the United States. So you open up 4,500 different additional possibilities of where you can go to. Gets to your destination quicker and faster.
And the line of flight on smaller planes is at a lower altitude as well. Talk about that.
Typically speaking, if you're not talking about a business jet,
right.
You're going to be operating at a lower altitude than what commercial airline is. Typically, they're operating in a 30 to 40,000 feet range, whereas we can operate anywhere from literally 2,000 feet above the ground up to, for most light general aviation airplanes, somewhere in the 25 to 28,000 foot range. There's a lot of space there. And because there's not as much traffic there, a lot of times you get more efficient in direct routings than what you could get if you're operating in the 30 to 40,000 foot range.
Tell us about the planes that you typically fly on your air commutes as you go around the country or jet back and forth between, say, Daytona and D.C.
I am really fortunate these days. I have the opportunity to fly a Cirrus SR-22T, which is the kind of flagship of our fractional program right now. And it's a fully loaded four-seat single-engine airplane that's almost certified for almost every single type of weather condition. It's certified for known ice, can take me up to 25,000 feet, goes 215 knots, which is roughly about 245 miles per hour inside of the airplane, burns about 17 gallons of gas, so it's really efficient, and it has all the technology that you could ever possibly imagine, everything from infrared cameras on board the airplane to highway in the sky capability, where you just literally fly the airplane through imaginary boxes that show up on the screen that you kind of fly through, and it's a, like a video game, all the way to XM radio and air conditioning. So when you have passengers going on, you can make them feel really comfortable, just like they're hopping in a car and going on a road trip somewhere.
Gee, Jamil, you sound like perhaps you're selling these airplanes, or that you run a business that sells these types of airplanes.
Imagine that. That is definitely a possibility.
So tell us about your travels around the country as an ambassador for the Federal Aviation Administration. How did that come about? How did you go from petitioning them and having the audacity to petition them for a flight license at age 13 to now being an ambassador and talking about transportation subjects?
That change was definitely a unique one that I would have never expected had you told me that a few years ago. But When I was in college at Embry-Riddle, I was involved in getting young people involved in aviation through a program called the Young Eagles Program, how I first got my start. And I had the opportunity to meet with the administrator of the FAA at the time, and we started talking. The FAA has a lot of initiatives to get young people involved in aviation. In fact, on an annual basis, close to 200,000 kids a year get exposed to the aviation industry through some of the FAA's educational programs. We started talking and realized that we both had a lot of common goals of what we were going to do or what we were trying to do. And the suggestion was made, why don't you serve as the FAA's ambassador for aviation education? And it was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. It was a good opportunity for me to give back to this industry that's given me a lot, as well as also have the opportunity to go out there and hopefully reach more students about the career opportunities that are available inside of the aviation industry. So in 2004, when I was still a student at Embry-Riddle, we came up with this, went to DC, signed the ambassador agreement at the time. And ever since then, I've had the opportunity and the privilege of working with the FAA. And one of the reasons why this is so important to me is because there's approximately 11 million people that have a career inside of the aviation and aerospace industry. And we're not just talking about pilots and mechanics. We're talking about engineers. We're talking about the people that manufacture airplanes, the people that sell them, the people that insure them, that fuel them, that operate airports, all sorts of different career fields. Unfortunately, over 50% of those people that are inside of the aviation and aerospace industries is over the age of 50. So over the next decade, we're expecting not only a shortage of actual pilots, but a shortage of people in all sorts of different career fields inside of this industry. And this industry has kind of become a vital part of our economy. You know, it represents about 5% of the total U.S. GDP right now inside of the aviation and aerospace industries. And it's also a dynamic industry. When you start and think about it, a lot of people think that aviation has kind of lost that zeal and that lust and that really imaginating captive audience that it had like 30 years ago when people used to dress up to go flying from point A to point B. And today it's kind of just like a bus inside of the air. Well, there's a lot of other aspects of the industry that's changing. When you look at the military side of aviation and the F-22 and some of the great airplanes that are being made on a technological side from that for defending our country, to looking at commercial space transportation, the fact that now, you know, 10 years ago, if you wanted to go into space, you had to become an astronaut and live your life and dedicate it to NASA. That's no longer the case. There's more advancements being made on the private commercial space transportation side than on the government side. Look at light business jets that are being made, where the concept of having an air taxi, where you could literally pick up the phone same way that you call up a taxi and have it take you to Chicago at economical prices compared to what doesn't exist today. All sorts of different amazing advancements are being made that I don't think a lot of people take a hard look at. And that's one of my jobs, is hopefully to make people remember that.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall, your host. Our guest is Jamel Larkins, an airplane pilot who runs a company called Ascension Aircraft and is one of the mentors and speakers for the 9th annual Kansas City Summer Transportation Institute, hosted by the University of Missouri Kansas City Institute for Human Development. That program runs June 18th through July 17th of this year. And he's been talking about his amazing story of flying solo at 14 after getting his first flying lesson at 12. By 18, he's doing turns and loops in an air show. And at the tender age of 28, he's running a multi-million-dollar business in airplane sales. We do have a caller. You're that interesting, Jamel. We have a caller from Lee Summit. Ken, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Amazing young man, great story. I wonder if he would comment on something that's tangentially related to what he discussed earlier, that is private planes and bypassing the TSA. I have experienced that. It's true. One loads right on the plane, and they land, and they get right off. And if one was so inclined, a nefarious person could have that plane packed with explosives and pull right up to the airport and let it go. Do you agree that's a big gaping hole in our security system?
Wow.
That's a really good question. And in theory, yes, that could happen. Unfortunately, or I guess I should say fortunately, the majority of the small airplanes that are flying out there today can only carry a fair amount. So by the time you put fuel on board the airplane, by the time you put passengers on board the airplane, the capability of loading the airplane with enough explosives where it could actually do something is not very likely. That is one of the things that TSA, I can assure you, looks at on a regular basis, because they not only monitor commercial aircraft operations, but they also secure the general aviation airports all across the country. And there's a lot of aviation organizations like the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, for instance, that has a program called Airport Watch, which is one of the things that we as a community do to kind of ensure and self-police ourselves to make sure situations like that don't happen.
And if you've ever flown private, you know that despite the fact that they don't have people with security wands and big machines and long lines, you can't just walk off the street and say, bring me a Cessna, I'm going to Des Moines.
And then the other thing about flying privately is, because it's a small community, there's never a time that there's someone on my plane that I don't know, you know, which is another big security safety feature compared to flying commercially, where anyone that wants to buy a ticket can hop on a commercial airliner. Hence the reason why we have some of those safety precautions set up on the commercial side. But on the general aviation side, there's never going to be a time someone that hops inside of my airplane that I haven't met or that I don't know through a trusted source.
No, where are we going today, buddy?
Yeah.
Why is it important for minorities to know about potential aviation careers? Your career is obviously one of merit and tenacity. You are African-American, though.
Yes.
So talk about the experience of a minority in this field and why it's important for minorities to look at this as an option.
Well, speaking of minorities in general, whether you're talking about women, African-American, or whatever the case may be, there's not a lot. One of the most recent statistics that I heard is that basically out of the 600,000 pilots out there, less than 2% of them are minorities. And that's sad to say. So it's definitely more of a homogeneous industry right now. There are a lot of initiatives out there to try to change that and get the diversity out there or get the diversity increase, especially on the women initiative side as well as minority side. So I think that will be changing over the next couple of decades. But I also think that a lot of people don't necessarily think about it. I mean, when I was growing up, there was very few of my friends that ever thought about becoming a pilot. You know, that it just didn't enter into their mind as something that they should probably consider. I think that's one of the major reasons. And I also think that it's just a difficult industry to get involved in, no matter who you are. The one thing that I can say about the industry is that it is very supportive, no matter who you are. I've been very fortunate as a whole of the people who I've met that have helped me get my career off the ground and have taken me under their wing where I could actually kind of accelerate my career versus having to make a lot of the mistakes that a lot of people make when they're getting involved in aviation.
And to that extent, what do you plan to talk to the students today at the local Transportation Institute about, the Kansas City Summer Transportation Institute?
Well, I'm really excited to actually be here to briefly talk about that. This is probably my third or fourth time coming here to the Summer Transportation Institute with the FAA. And the opportunity to really talk to them just about two things. One, once again, the aviation and aerospace industry is a very dynamic industry, one that you can have a high-paying career, one that's rewarding, one that's exciting and kind of dynamic. And then the second thing is whether they have an interest of truly getting involved inside of the aviation or industry or not. The biggest thing that I really want to leave with them is that you can work hard, dream big, and make those dreams become a reality. As trite and as common as they probably hear of that saying, that here's someone that's not too much older than them that was in their shoes not too long ago, and there was a dream there, one that had to deal with the federal government, one that had to deal with a lack of funds, one that had to deal with no real access into the industry. And you can open up doors. And if the doors don't exist, go ahead and create one. And that's one of the big things that I'm looking forward to kind of talking to the students today at the Summer Transportation Institute.
It is sort of a cliche to tell young people to dream big. What are some of the more practical advice, including perhaps insight into careers in transportation, dialing down into the you can do whatever you put your mind to speech?
One of the things that I learned early on was that if there's something that you want to accomplish, one of the big things that you can do is try to find people that have actually accomplished that goal or that career or whatever the case may be. Figure out what they did to accomplish it and then create a checklist essentially for yourself. So if there's someone that, you know, became an airline pilot and you want to become an airline pilot, realize that there's licenses that you have to get. There's degrees that you have to get to be able to make that happen. And then make a checklist and post it on your wall. And every single day that you wake up, see if you're doing anything in your day productive to help you accomplish that goal, or check off one additional thing on that list. And hopefully, if you're able to check off all of those additional things on your list and you remind yourself on a daily basis of what it's going to take for you to be able to do it, you'll be able to achieve that goal.
Many students at the KC Summer Transportation Institute have physical or learning disabilities, and they're involved in this program. What careers are open to them? What do you say to them?
There's a wide range of them, actually, still. One of the big things that I'm a huge proponent of is, no matter if you have disabilities or you have something that might be a hindrance, or what some people may say is a limitation, that you don't allow that to stop you from accomplishing whatever you want. So no matter what the disabilities are, a great example of this is, there's a young lady that recently got her pilot's license, and she has no arms. So imagine being able to fly an airplane without any arms. If someone can learn and obtain their pilot's license and prove to the FAA that they can safely handle an airplane in solo flight with no arms, there's no reason why someone that just has any sort of disability can't get involved inside of this industry if they really want to.
Do you keep in touch with some of the kids who have enough tenacity and forthrightness to ask for your information? And if so, what have been some of the success stories or some of the progress?
Absolutely. And it's really cool now that we've been doing this tour for almost 8 years, where I've had the opportunity to actually see some students that were kind of early on in their, you know, high school career, getting involved in getting careers. I've had people that have actually become pilots, obtained their pilot's license. I've had people that have actually started up their own magazine that had nothing to do with aviation, but a magazine for girls. Had people start up their own t-shirt companies. All sorts of different unique things. And the coolest thing about those stories is, typically they're, you know, I heard you speak, or I read about you, or saw you on TV, and you made me realize that I could really start doing something today. And because of that, it was a little bit of the catalyst that I needed to actually start going after my dream.
Tell me about the process of being in an air show. Now, flying an airplane is one thing. Having an aviation company is one thing. Tell me about the stunt.
It's a area. Lot of fun. I would have to say, out of all the flying that I've done, that is probably the most unique experience out of everything. The chance to be able to be inside of an aerobatic biplane, or any aerobatic airplane for that matter, be a couple hundred feet off the ground, doing loops, rolls, spins, all sorts of different things, going 210 miles an hour inverted a couple hundred feet off the ground, sometimes in front of an audience that could be as large as 70,000 people. It's a unique experience.
What made you want to do that? Now, like I said, getting your pilot's license and everything is interesting enough, but to take that risk, your mom thought you were crazy enough just for flying in general. This is something totally different. What about the risk of that? We lost a stunt pilot in a fatal crash in August last year, and actually had the person who called that air show and was there to witness that in person here.
Sure.
And this was a trained pilot. So talk about the risk.
There's definitely risk, but there's, believe it or not, is ways of managing that risk that's associated with flying air shows. Every once in a while, we still do have an incident or accident that happens that's unfortunate. One of the good things that we can say inside the United States is, because of the rules and regulations associated with air shows here inside the United States, there has not been a spectator fatality at an air show for almost 50 years. So that's something that the air show industry is very, very proud of, is that safety record for the spectators that come to it. But there are occasionally accidents with performers that are involved inside of airplanes. One of the things that you learn early on as you are becoming a performer is how to manage that risk. Everything from a safety standpoint to the fact that when you are flying an air show, you have to be safe. So we practiced our routine literally thousands of times up high at our home base before we ever bring it to an air show. If there's going to be a new maneuver that I'm going to incorporate in my routine, I've probably have done that, like I said, over a couple thousand times, just to perfect it and know everything the airplane's going to do before I ever bring it into my show.
Have you ever had a scare on one of your routines?
I have a couple of times, but fortunately, none of them have been major. The majority of times that they happen are actually in training sessions and not actually at an air show.
What actually happened?
Everything from I was coming up and doing a hammerhead at one time, which is a maneuver that's a vertical maneuver. You're going perpendicular from the ground. And as soon as the airplane gets really slow, almost to the point where it's about to be zero, you kick over a little bit of rudder and the airplane pivots on the vertical axis coming back down towards the ground.
So it's like a free fall.
Yes. At the point that I was just about to pivot, I hear this loud pop that goes off on the plane. And the airplane that I had that I was flying aerobatics in is a aerobatic biplane. So the wings were wood and it's covered by fabric. We have inspection panels inside of the airplane that we use to inspect the wings to make sure that they're still flying safely. One of those inspection panels had popped off in the middle of this maneuver because of the air pressure on it. And anytime you're pointing straight up at the sky, about to be at 0 miles per hour, and you hear a loud pop, it's probably not the best time to hear anything along those lines.
Not at all. How did you recover?
I look up as I pull out of the maneuver, and I see this gaping hole on the top of my left wing, and I'm like, okay, I know what happened. Flew to my nearest airport, landed, got it fixed, and later on that day, I was up in the air. Had a few other minor emergencies, nothing major. But one of the other good things about being a pilot in general is the safety aspect involved in it. And the pilot training that you do to be able to get your license, I would say probably 40% of it is about emergency maneuvers and about how to handle emergency in the event it happens.
What's next for you and your business? You've had an incredibly inspiring story and run a multi-million dollar business at 28 after getting your first flight at 14. What's next for you?
We recently, earlier this year, started up a venture that I'm really excited about called Ascension Air. And it's basically a fractional ownership program for personally flown aircraft. So the concept where a pilot could have the opportunity to get involved inside of an airplane that now typically costs about $750,000 if they're going to buy a brand new one from the factory and get the chance to fly that airplane for the same amount that they normally do, for the cost of owning a 30-year-old airplane. It's something that I think is going to give pilots the opportunity to fly airplanes. Safer airplanes, newer airplanes that never existed before.
Our guest is Jamel Larkins, an airplane pilot who runs Ascension Aircraft and is one of the mentors and is here to speak with the 9th Annual Kansas City Summer Transportation Institute, hosted by the University of Missouri Kansas City Institute for Human Development. The program runs June 18th through July 17th here in the Metro. For more information about the program, go to kcur.org to find out more about that. A very inspiring story from Jamel Larkins. Thank you, Mr. Larkins, for joining us here on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
And tune in tomorrow as the food critics set the table for culinary delights. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi, executive produced by Bill Anderson with help from Charlie Upchurch. Kim Noble is our announcer. Emily Mutard manages our website. Central Standard's intro theme music is by Miles Bonney, and the outro, what you're hearing right now, is by The Wilnots. Up to Date is next with a discussion on the new memoir from Anthony Swofford on hotels, hospitals, and jails. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.